Hello and welcome to Developing Perspective. Developing Perspective is a podcast discussing news of note in iOS development, Apple, and the like. I'm your host, David Smith. I'm an independent iOS and Mac developer based in Herndon, Virginia. This is show number 119, and today is Friday, April 12th. Developing Perspective is never longer than 15 minutes, so let's get started. All right, I got four quick topics to talk through today. And first, I was going to start off by talking a little bit about just kind of lending an opinion about the whole thing this week about app rejections, the App Store policy being pulled, and that kind of came out of the app gratis, debacle, whatever you want to call it, scenario. And if you haven't heard about it, basically there was this app that was kind of doing app promotion, kind of providing an alternate way to find apps that you could kind of pay to buy things. I don't really understand all of exactly how their business model worked. But the reality is, the short version is Apple decided to reject or pull the app from the store for violating two lines in the app review guidelines. And there was a bit of a back and forth about that. Like, what does that mean? It's like, here's this company with many people, a lot of funding, and all of a sudden their business just disappears overnight. Like, that's a little bit disconcerting, rough, especially if you're somebody who makes your business and you're living in the store. It just reminds me of, it's just one of those things of, if you want to work in this business, if you want to make your living in the App Store, it is a simple reality and a truth that is just the nature of the beast. And I've talked about this many times before, how I like that. As much as it's disconcerting, as much as I think that there are problems and challenges and there are things that Apple doesn't do right, I like that that's the case because I think in the broad strokes, it improves the quality of the store. That generally speaking, what Apple's goal is usually to make the App Store experience the best as it can possibly be for its customers, and that broadly speaking, it is a fair system for some definition of fair. And so you just have to understand that if you do anything that gets close to the line, you're gambling at that point. It's not, and you just have to go into it with that mentality and that mindset, I think. And that's just kind of the way it is. It's like it's like high risk, high reward the closer you get to that line. And it's just interesting because it doesn't mean that you have to be totally paranoid about it, but it's just understanding that that's what you're doing. And the closer you get, if you read through the app review guidelines and there's a line in there that's getting close to something that you're wanting to do, or you think you found kind of this angle or this niche, that's just the reality, is that you're putting yourself and your business in a place that it could disappear overnight. And that's just the way it is. And I like that in that I think that the end result is that it's a better store. The individual cases and the people involved and all that kind of thing can be very difficult, very tragic, and very sad. But it's just it's like staying away from those types of areas and those types of things is one approach to take. And then two is just to accept it, mark it up as a business risk and kind of go with it. And that's just kind of where you are. And it's one of those things that there is no. That doesn't make me sort of. It's never happy when these things happen, and they happen all the time, or often enough that it certainly is a pervasive problem. But the reality is, app rejection is just part of having this kind of store experience, and that's on the plus side. I think is why the App Store is so successful, and there's a high degree of user trust and those types of things. In this case, I think one of the policies is about creating alternate App Store experiences and about incentivizing downloads and those types of things. The goal is to make sure that the charts and the store ranking and things are reflective of the actual, genuine user interest in applications rather than just sort of who can write the biggest check, which I think is a good thing. The exact implementation, complicated. But the goal and the spirit behind it, I think, makes sense. And so that's kind of where I come down on those types of things. But I just wanted to sort of put that out there. Next thing I wanted to talk about is something more architectural, switching to much more technical. But it was something that I've been working on a lot in FeedWrangler that I thought would be an interesting thing to share. Is an approach to building things that I found to be very, very good in terms of performance and structure and sort of reliability, maybe is the best way to think about it. And it's the ability to make your application as much as you can into discrete operations that are rerunnable. And this is something that I've been doing for a lot of – there's a lot of operations and things in Feed Wrangler where this is the case. And as an example of something like this, it's rather than, for example, in Feed Wrangler when you mark something as red, I could just make the server request to do that. I could just say, you know, whatever, you know, call feedwrangler.net and say, you know, mark as red. And I could do that in a direct call based on, you know, kicked off when the user hits that button. However, if I do that, it creates all these kind of problems and challenges down the road. What if that request times out? If there's a network connectivity problem? If they go into a tunnel and it doesn't get through? Now you have this weird state of how do you show that to your user in a way that is that A, is reasonable and useful to them. So obviously if there's an error that happens, maybe that error is actually only going to happen 30 seconds down the road. And the user's moved on. The user's started doing other things in the application. And all of a sudden you pop up a message saying failed, you know, it's like couldn't connect to server. It's like that could be totally unrelated. And the server connectivity could actually be back now. And so what I tend to do, what I've been heading towards, is to structure most of my, as much as I can, my application on a more of a queue basis. And that's a queue, you know, Q-U-E-U-E, that what I want to do is make it so that I can just kind of rerun these operations. And so I just sort of structure my application in that way. And so instead of doing that, you know, when I have this read request, I make an operation, I put it on a queue, and then I try and run it. And, you know, tries to hit the server. If it doesn't work, then I'll try it again at, you know, various timeouts and things. And obviously there's a lot of nuance to getting that exactly right. But in general, what I found is that makes my app much more reliable and much more simple in many ways to build because I don't have to deal with quite as many error cases. There are still certainly cases that you need to deal with and show user feedback and things. You know, if there's just no connectivity and they're trying to do a lot of stuff, it's like you need to show them something probably. But generally speaking, it sort of is the app will kind of naturally work itself into a state that is correct over time rather than having sort of constantly badgering the user about that. And so it's just something that I've been doing a lot. And I do the same thing a lot on my website and on the web services side of it as well, which I think I mentioned before. But it works really well there where rather than, you know, for example, when I'm going out and doing feed parsing and feed aggregation, I'm, you know, running out my spiders and they're going off and they're pulling in all, you know, filling in thousands of feeds and parsing them and processing them. That each one of those requests to pull a feed, you know, is created as its own distinct operation, put in a queue, and then run. And that means if anything goes weird with it, if anything gets stuck, it doesn't affect anybody else. They all kind of go their natural way. And if it, you know, if it fails, it can just be put back onto the queue to be retried if I want or not. And I found that works really well for reliability, for scaling. And another great thing about queuing as an approach and a structure, if you split – because all the operations are atomic, you're designing your app to be parallelizable, which is great, both on the server side and on the device, that if you make something – just if you focus on making it parallelizable, your performance can go up a lot. So for example, with my making network requests – you know, these atomic operations that can be run essentially in any order, as much as I, you know, to some approximation, you know, I can go and run three of them at a time, and that's okay because of the way that it's structured. You know, they're not dependent on each other. They're not kind of queuing up. And so you can make things a lot more performant that way. Next thing I wanted to talk about is something that I've been struggling with a little bit in Feed Wrangler that I thought was an interesting question. And this is understanding perfection or understanding do you need to ship something perfect, wonderful, exactly what you want it to be, or do you just, or is it more important to ship? And this is a complicated question. This is something that I've been really wrestling with recently. I think I mentioned in the last episode that I'm trying to ship the iOS version of Feed Wrangler today. You know, it's Friday, and I'm trying to get it out by the end of the week. And that's entirely an artificial timeline that I'm and pressure that I'm putting on myself. And the goal of that, obviously, is like Feed Wrangler is kind of a unique situation where. It's specifically trying to target a market that is time limited. You know, on July 1st, Google Reader is going to go away. And so, yeah, and I'm trying to create a replacement for that unintentionally in some ways, but the reality is I'm creating something that will be a replacement for that for many people. And so I want to get that out in enough time to kind of make that migration. And so I'm kind of putting myself under somewhat of an artificial constraint to do that. But it's a challenging thing to understand, like, what's good enough and where do you draw those lines? Where do you decide? And generally what I've been trying to do is it's like I'm taking the approach that I have a couple of parameters. One, I don't ever really liked the concept of charging people money for what I would anything that I would label as beta software. And I've seen this happen a couple of times. You kind of, you know, people ship things and it's like, oh, it's still in beta. That always feels weird to me if you're charging for that, because in my mind anyway, what beta means is I know it's broken in some way. And if I know it's broken in a way that's enough that I'm really kind of calling it a beta, that feels a little funny to then take money for that. And so what I'd rather do is scale the application down to a point that it's, I would say, it's production ready, charge for that, and then grow it out. And that's generally, I think, the approach that I've been taking with FeedWrangler. And I think it generally works, that rather than worrying about having, you know, I have this long list of features and things that I'm working on and things that will come down the road, or approaches or things that I can do that will just come naturally down the road. And I'm thinking about, rather than being too focused on making sure they're all in there before I ship, I'm saying, okay, I'm going to narrow that down, polish, refine as much as I can, make it really reliable, solid, and then ship that. And know that I've got a lot of good fodder for 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. And this is something I didn't check the weather that I think was really well received, where if you get into this habit of, you know, once you've launched an app, to ship updates pretty quickly, I think it builds a lot of trust and endearment from your users, because it feels like you're really engaged and you're really responsive to what they're saying, to the problems they're having, and to fixing those things. So that's kind of what I'm doing. It's sort of like, rather than going big, I'm just trying to ship a solid kernel of that works exactly how I want it, and then I'll, you know, add in some more bells and whistles based on what users want. And that also speaks to a little bit of the problem of whenever you ship something, no matter how many sort of beta feedback you get, you're always going to get people, your customers are going to use your application in ways that you never expected or imagined. And that's a good thing. It can create opportunities and drive it in directions that you may not necessarily have expected. And that can often be really, really helpful for driving the product. And so you can end up spending time on features that no one will use. On the flip side, alternatively, better to spend that time polishing things that you think that you know people will use, that are sort of core functionality, and then building the extra things based on what people really want, what the needs people have. And then when you give it to them, people feel great because they feel like they just got a bonus, that they got something additional. It's like they bought X and they just got X plus Y, which is kind of cool. All right, and the last thing I wanted to talk about is just a quick mention of some changes that Linode did this week. I think I've mentioned many times, I'm a big Linode fan. That's where I host almost all my stuff. And it's kind of fascinating to me how web services just continues the march towards cheaper and better, just keeps going. And it's kind of just remarkable to me, where I was looking at it this week. They've done this whole series of different upgrades and changes to their servers. Recently, and the most recent one they announced is that they're changing the way that their memory pricing, basically, and they doubled the memory for the same price, essentially, for all of their machines that you can rent. And the kind of crazy part for that for me is that essentially what they did is in one blog post they halved my hosting costs for almost all of what I do. For example, right now my recipe book is about $300 a month is what I pay for the servers that I have there. And it'll go to 160 after I migrate over to the new structure, because for me, the majority of what I do is memory bound rather than CPU, network, bandwidth, storage, those types of binds. And so if they were giving, you know, double the memory for the same price, I can just, for almost all my things, I can just bump down one tier, migrate over to that, and have exactly the same machine that works perfectly and does exactly what I want, but for half the cost. Obviously, for some people, it would make sense if they'd rather just have twice the memory, and that'd be great. But for what I do, most of it's the memory is the limiting factor, but it's in a way that I want to still have multiple machines. You know, so the limiting factor for the number of requests that a lot of my web services can handle is fairly memory oriented for a lot of what I do, but I still want to have multiple machines for redundancy and for latency and those types of things. So it's just kind of one of those fascinating things how web services are just more and more heading in that direction, and it creates this delightful pressure and competitiveness among hosting providers that I just think is really cool. So anyway, that's it for today's show. Hopefully I'll be shipping FeedWrangler this afternoon, so wish me luck for that, and hopefully again launching it probably in about 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to that, and I'll have a lot to say on the show. If you have any comments, just let me know on Twitter. I'm _DavidSmith there. On AppNet, I'm David Smith. And otherwise, have a great weekend. Happy coding, and I will talk to you later. Bye.